Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel after show. We're talking about season 2, episode 2, Midway to Midtown. Susie is hiding out. Midge is back in New York taking down some toxic masculinity in the comedy world. And Rose and Abe are figuring things out. We're talking about it all right now, so don't go away.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
There's no business like show.
We're getting into our dance formation.
No business I know.
Oh, man. As soon as the song played, I said, we're starting with this song. Jeff is clearly the lead dancer of this panel.
For you audio listeners, I did a face.
You guys, we're talking about episode 2 of our favorite show, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Midway to Midtown. There's so much to break down. Before we get into it, I'm Steph Sabra. I'm joined by the lovely, the most marvelous panel on earth.
True. I'm Amy Maestri. Excited to be here, guys.
Brianna.
Yes, I'm also here, and my name is Brianna Phipps.
You're pulling an Abe, and you're not listening.
I was going to say, you're Abing over there. I'll be the panel's resident Rose.
You on my screen was more entertaining, I guess, than you in real life.
I understand.
Guys, I'm here, too. Okay. I don't feel very seen. My name's Jeff. Hi.
Jeff Graham is here, and let me tell you, he is seen, he is heard. We love
thank
him.
You. Thank you.
And I just want to clarify, I was not listening for 1 second so I could pull up the chat to chat with you lovely folks at home. So if you're here, please chat along with us.
Vanessa, where'd you go? We lost Vanessa.
You don't know that? There's two watching.
That's true. Vanessa, if you're here, say hi.
And there's going to be so many more.
Yes. So today we're going to start off where we left off with Rose and Abe and Abe's beautiful transition into becoming the husband we always knew he could be, and Midge and Susie, and then we'll hit the sexist world of comedy and Midge's amazing performance, and we'll have a special segment where we feature a female comedian. And that will Jeff will lead us on that today, and Bree will hit us with some news and gossip, and then we'll wrap it up with some predictions for episode 3, which I can't wait for. Before we get into it, what was your guys' overall thoughts of episode 2?
Ooh, I loved it.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh. I'm just turning into an old Jewish grandmother as I watch this show.
The entire episode could have been boring. It wasn't. But it could have been, and if that last scene of her at the comedy club had happened, I still would have loved it. Luckily for all of us, it was all entertaining. But and there was a really great shot that I'll bring up later, but it was like one of my favorite shots in television I've ever seen.
Ooh! Ooh. What a tease!
What a tease! I'm like, now I'm on the edge of my seat. Great episode again. I was pretty moved by the sweetness of the Rose and Abe stuff. The show handle, we'll get to the specifics, but they've been handling their marriage in a way that feels sweet, but not like overly sweet. It's funny, you know, this is the same creator as Gilmore Girls, which is exactly what it is. But if Gilmore Girls is like a cup of hot chocolate with 3 scoops of sugar, this is more like a spot of tea with a little bit of sugar in
and
it.
And some brandy. Ooh.
Yeah. So I love Amy Sherman-Palladino and I do like Gilmore Girls, but this is, do I just surprise you guys more and more every week? But I think that this, I like how this show has a bit more of an edge. It's like, whereas, you know, Lorelai's romantic relationship would be like so sweet and like kind of Hallmark, I think Abe and Rose are handled with a bit more of an edge, but it's still very warm.
I was so thrilled to see Abe and Rose more this season, mm-hmm. just from episode 1 and 2, and their development as characters. They could have so easily made this where Abe kind of just stuck to his ways and Rose had to deal with it. But instead, Abe just bloomed into this beautiful creature. So let's talk about Rose and Abe. Abe, we cut to a scene where Abe is in like this a bar with some Frenchmen that he met, and they're talking about the Bible and all this deep thinking material. It's amazing.
Well, I love that he's talking to people that he doesn't speak their language at all. Like, at all. And but luckily they speak some of his, so it works. But yeah, I literally wrote that he should just stay in Paris because he's such a better person here and so much more laid back. He's not neurotic. Like, this isn't a person I could see someone falling in love with. Like, when you first meet Abe, you're kind of like, what did you see in him? Yeah. And I'm like, okay. Okay, I see what you saw in him, if this is who you fell in love with. Mm-hmm. So he should literally, every 2 years, go to Paris, Abe, take a break.
Yes. Yeah,
get refreshed, become this person again, and then if you need to go back, go back.
Especially just from episode one, like, that was, like, Abe at level, like, 100. Like, I don't know if we've ever seen him that high up on the Abe scale. So yes. Then to get to see him here, but still being Abe, like, still debating, like, theories and ideas and, like, finding his own little place there, but, like, at such a calmer, cooler level, was just, like, so lovely to see.
And not only that, they ignited their romance again. They're sharing this little quaint bed and doing normal date stuff, and they're totally in love.
Mm-hmm. I love seeing this. It's one of my favorite things in real life, too. Like, my godparents are like this. When you see people that are older that still have this love for each other, it's, like, the happiest thing to me in the world. It just puts a smile on my face all the time. I know other people find it gross when old people are sexual with each other. I'm just like, oh, that's so sweet. They've, like, made it through all these years and they still have this adoration for each other. And that's what I had with them. I was like, yes.
This show should be a class in montage sequences.
Ooh, well said.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy what they do, and you can feel an entire week or whatever it may be so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, just with the production, like, how are they shooting this? Because they were really in Paris, and this is the kind of show I bet a Parisian would like, so they probably liked having this production here, but they were closing down major streets, and we had shots that were right by Notre Dame, and...
Oh, fun fact about that. One of my friends that I met, she was in Paris, and she also is a fan of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and there's a scene, I think it's in episode two, it might have been in episode one when they were setting the scene of Paris, where there's a group of people dancing, and you see that old woman mm-hmm. dancing? She's really there all the time.
Oh my gosh. She was
in Paris last year and met that woman.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was like a real Parisian dance group.
I'm confused, though. If that was in the 1950s, how is she still? Oh, never mind. I'm sorry. I get it. Sorry. Okay.
Were you guys surprised that Rose wants to stay in Paris? No. Like, that house, I would have lived in that house.
I want to live there forever.
Her life for herself and for Abe is just... all together better here. Like, I know that he has his job and that their daughter and grandchildren are all back there, but I understand, like, if you're back home and you have nothing to do all day and you're just being a housewife and you come here and it's just, you have no responsibilities per se and you just get to have this, like, breath of fresh air, like, there's no reason you'd want to leave. Obviously it's a false thing, it can't stay forever, because at some point that will become your life and he will find other things and it'll go back to what it was there, because vacations are for a purpose, but I understand her wanting to stay mm-hmm. completely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the way that they brought this storyline in for her this season is just so satisfying mm-hmm. to get to see her flourish that way. Because the same way that, like, Abe is still kind of himself, but in just, like, such a happier, more relaxed way, whereas this is stuff that we've never seen from her, you know, like, that she's always had in there, that she's just finally getting to show everyone this season.
Well, what I love about that is it illuminates so much about Midge. Sometimes you look at a character like Midge and you're like, I don't totally buy that this daughter would have come out of those two parents. But when you see this brilliant, incredibly curious, creative woman who just never got the chance to be any of that, you're like, oh, this is the product of, you know, you're like, oh, I see now why Rose is Midge's mom and why Midge is Rose's daughter.
That's a great
especially
point.
That scene of Rose at the with the art school.
Oh,
when she's walking around with the, mm-hmm. with
oh,
the younger
the
girl
tour.
The younger girl keeps yes. talking about, like, her dates and stuff. Just that Rose, I think I understand Midge yeah. so much better.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Quick little jokes back. And man, she was living her best life.
Mm-hmm.
Get
and
Rose.
Abe kind of tries to bring her back to reality, as did Midge, where his classes are starting at Columbia soon. And Midge obviously has kids, and that's her grandkids who, what does she describe them as? Something like fine. Like something very, like what you wouldn't want your grandma to
well,
say
actually,
about you.
Jeff, really fast, because you did have a take on the kids in this show.
Yeah, I love the way this show handles the kids, because they're such an afterthought. One, that's, like, societal. Like, that's a reflection on the times where, like, really, especially wealthy families didn't always mother their children. But the other thing I love about this is it's like the writers were in the room, and they were like, the one thing is, like, Midge is a mom. Like, do we need to, like, address the kids? And the writers are like, nah, So, like, rather than, like, ignore it, they make it a joke, which is, like, what makes this a comedy. So, like, the characters also acknowledge that these kids are an afterthought, and the writers don't really care about developing them. To the point where, like, the one scene we get of Ethan...
Amazing.
He's drinking beer with Susie.
Amazing. That duo so could funny. Be the best of the season.
And it's, like, that's what makes the show a comedy, is, like, in the drama version, we'd have, like, a serious subplot where, like, the kids are being neglected, but in this, it's, like, meh... The kids will just drink beer and it's fine.
Yeah,
like,
Zelda's
such
here.
A good point.
Zelda's
got him. It's fine.
But that was him telling Rose, like, we can't buy this house. We have to go back, Rose. Was just the most heartbreaking thing I've ever seen. Mm.
Yeah, I think one of the lines that stood out to me was when he was saying, you know, like, I'm a teacher, I'm tenured, I have to go back for these reasons, I would lose all these things. And she was like, if I don't go back, what would I lose?
Yeah, and she can't think of anything.
Yeah, and I was just like, ooh, like, that one hurt me.
Yeah.
And in that same scene, it kind of displayed American wifedom, so to speak, and she was like, here, I am shatterproof. And at home, she was just working for other people. She didn't have an identity. And that was really heartbreaking to me. But I also think it's a moment that she can reclaim her time. She can Maxine Waters us and just own it. And Abe was the best because he's like, I'm setting you up with classes to further the education that you had to stop, put on hold.
But before we get into that, I'm just going back a little bit because that... The shot that I was talking about, this was my favorite shot, where it's the Eiffel Tower, and it flips, meets the Empire State Building, and it's them traveling from Paris to New York.
Yes.
And that super cool.
One of the coolest shots I've ever seen in television.
I'm so glad loved you brought it. That up. It's those little things, like, everything is perfect.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're not even going to waste an establishing shot. They're like, no. We have 2 seconds here to get them back to New York. How are we going to do it in the most creative way possible?
Yeah.
That's how we're going to do it. The way to jump back to what Steph mentioned, the way Abe is like these baby steps of like seeing his wife again. I thought this was so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I just like, again, it was a realistic way to handle a marriage getting repaired. It would have been too much if Abe had flowers set out because he hasn't grown that much yet, but... What did he say when he was talking about the dancing? He's like, yeah,
yes.
I mean, sure, we were having fun, but we weren't good yet. We were
adorable, but our technique was terrible.
Yeah.
I had to write that down.
Yeah,
I just loved how we get back to New York and they're all going about doing their day-to-day life. And you just see her just like so depressed and so, well, everyone else has stuff to do and I'm just going to be here. And just in that kind of afterthought of when you get back from somewhere where you were so happy. And then he says those little things, and you just see her face all of a sudden just, like, perk up, like, oh, maybe Paris isn't gone. Paris is now here. Like, he has changed. Mm-hmm. He is trying now, and he's trying to include me in things and make my life better. And it was just the most sweet, pure shot thing I've ever seen, was her face just do this little, like, perk up moment.
Mm-hmm. She literally just, like, came back to life in that moment.
I love that. Such a good distinction that... Paris is coming to her. It was always just her. It wasn't necessarily the place.
Mm.
Even though we all would love a trip to Paris.
We would. But if you guys want a different kind of trip, you can always trip around our networks here at AfterBuzz TV.
That's how you pivot, baby.
I was going to say, maybe.
I cannot hear that word without friends, but anyway.
I know. Our after shows are so good that you'll trip too. I think I should leave. Anyway, guys, we do have after shows for every single genre on the network. We've got dramas, we've got comedies, we've got reality TV and sci-fi. We even have soap operas. We literally have everything here. And just like you guys, we're obsessed with television, and we have the best after shows you could ever catch on the network. If you like what we do, please hit that subscribe button down below, guys. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you hit subscribe, you'll actually get content curated for you. You can turn off notifications, and it makes your YouTube experience much, much better. I know because I did it. I finally bit the bullet and wanted to practice what I preach, and I'm really glad I did. So I'm speaking from experience. You guys should subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, go ahead and review our podcast. We'd really appreciate if you would give us those 5 stars on iTunes because it helps other people find the show. And like we said, this is a gem of a show, and we want more people to hear about it. And one way you can help is by rating our podcast. So thank you guys, and thanks for being the best fans. Y'all, we love you.
Yeah, we do. I love you guys. I'll rate you guys on our own podcast.
Hell yeah.
That's narcissism for you. Susie had a narcissistic, beautiful scene where she got to really live in this pure joy moment where she's kind of in the hideout and she's at Midge's house. And Midge has written all these rules for her, like, don't wear Abe's robe. What does she do? She puts on Abe's robe and she's smoking weed, she's taking a bath, face mask. What did you think about
Susie
this scene?
Susie in that bathtub is... just me in a nutshell.
You should be her. That's your spirit animal.
That she is my spirit animal in that high in a bathtub.
Nice.
Oh my god, I love it.
Perfect.
Sounds Zelda's nice. Making her sandwiches. Yeah.
I mean, we saw her apartment before. Okay. Yeah. Any of us, if they were like, here's this magnificent apartment, go play in it for a while.
100%.
Like, yes, and she was just taking every advantage that she can, and she was living her best life in that moment. Mm-hmm.
What a great opening sequence, like, to see, of course, Midge would leave 1,000 notes for her. Of course, she would do the exact opposite of everything. Of course, she would get stoned in the bathtub. And then also, I love the juxtaposition between her and Imogen when she comes in.
And just to go off on your course, of course, Imogen walks in and without... being let in, just comes in and just starts taking over.
Bree, I'm glad you mentioned this off air, how great this actress is. She's really good. I think it's even the minor characters are really paid attention to and cared for by these writers. And Imogen is a really delightful character.
Imogen is kind of like vocally what all of us are on the inside, which is making everything about us.
Yeah. Well said.
Like every single time, you didn't do this, this is about me. You didn't tell me about this. You went away and didn't tell me. Like, that's all of us inner monologuing, but we never actually say it, but she says it.
She totally is.
And I love the relationship between her and Midge because Midge, of course, has her marriage is just completely ruined. And Imogen has the marriage that Midge thought she had. Mm. And she comes in and she sees Susie. But Susie can literally win over everyone, except she couldn't talk because she was so high. Yeah.
it feels like a flower is yelling at me. That's one of my favorites.
I just love that the biggest... because we've been on this trip now with Abe and Rose, and we see Rose in this new light where she's not uptight and she's not, like, so aggressive. And then... the big thing that everyone's nervous about is that she used her soap, Rose's soap.
Oh, yeah. So true.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Rose now is not going to care.
Oh, yeah. No. Parisian Rose is like, what?
Parisian Rose is like,
c'est la vie.
Girl, use that soap.
Parisian Rose. Great nickname. They call me Parisian Rose.
I feel like that's your drag name now, Jeff.
So you know.
Yes.
Okay, I'll take it.
Definitely is.
Thankfully, right after that, Midge comes in to clear the air of who Susie is and why she's in the bathtub. But I like this scene because this was where Midge was actually able to talk to her about that news article that she saw about her. And Midge is like, you need to take this serious. What do you guys think? Midge seems like she's really serious about the career, but when it comes to these things that are part of the career, it seems like she's scared, in my opinion.
She's terrified.
Yeah. I think she's ready for the idea of the career itself, but is she still struggling with, like, what comes along with it of having, obviously, like, no one knows still at this point. So I think, the idea of it, she's very ready, but all the baggage she doesn't know how to handle.
And the one person in her life that does know is turned off by it. Right. You know, Joel is now gone again because of this career. So any fear she had originally, now I feel like it's amplified.
Such a good point.
Now who else is going to leave my life if I pursue this?
So glad you said that, Brie, because what's so smart about this writing is that in the first season, Midge was afraid of the career because it was new and it was unheard of. But in this season, because we had that amazing conversation in the first episode, the stakes are her romantic life. You know, the writers had to figure out a way to up these stakes if she moves forward. And it costing her marriage is now the stakes. So... it's so smartly written in that way.
And speaking of her marriage, Joel is kind of on the other side of things. And he's getting calls from his mom. And he's trying to take over the business. And also buy her an apartment. Do you think this is him trying to make up for kind of literally screwing up her entire life? Because women had no ownership.
I mean, I think he is trying to make up in some sense, but I think he's also trying to prove that he's still worth something.
Yeah.
Because he now doesn't have a job, he doesn't have a marriage, you know. in that time period, then what are you as a man if you don't have those things? So I think he's also, we know he's insecure, but now it's like, okay, I'm going to get into the family business. I'm going to help my dad out. I'm going to help Midge out. Like, he's grasping onto the only things he can.
It's that thing too. This is something I've learned in my first 4 months of marriage. Sometimes women will offer their problems to you, but they actually don't want you to fix them.
Oh, 100%.
They just want you to hear them. But so, as a man, I'm sometimes programmed to like offer all these solutions. And so I think I so recognize my wife and I when Joel was like, here is a solution. And she didn't want that. She didn't want him to solve the problem. She wanted him to hear the problem. And so it's, I just understood in that moment, like, Joel, you didn't do this right.
Oh, that's so smart of you to say, because that happens. I feel like that's so many fights in relationships. Oh, yes. I've had that fight in relationships where it's like, I just want you to listen to me, right. And you're trying to fix this. I don't need you to fix it.
Right.
Yeah. Totally. My boyfriend has literally been like, I'm not going to give you my response if you're not going to take my advice. I'm like, that's the thing. I never asked for your advice. Right. I asked for you to listen.
But it's so funny because as a guy, what we think loving you is fixing it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I want you to know our intentions are so good.
It's like, it is. It's very like pure and simple. Like guys that are just like, no.
This
you're,
problem?
You're hurting. I
here's
fix.
Solution.
Yeah. It's like it perfectly sums up men and women in a nutshell, where it's like women are this emotional beings who just need to talk and get their feelings out, and men are like, problem solve, right. Fix, make things good.
Me here and do things. Yeah. That, I think that was like a little snapshot of Joel trying to, I think in his mind, to be the man he needs to be right now is to fix it, whereas really the man Midge wants right now is someone who's going to listen.
Yeah.
Totally.
And support her emotionally.
And it's not just in her, it's like for his family too. He's like, yeah. I need to fix my dad's stuff. I need to fix my mom's books. Yeah. Also, just a shout out to Joel's parents, because again, the acting in this entire show is phenomenal, even in these characters that are, just get little moments.
Yeah.
His mom,
oh my gosh,
makes hilarious. Everything out of every scene she's in.
She's like a quintessential East Coast Jewish mother.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the best. Yeah.
For Joel in this episode, my only note on him was he's being real thirsty to not be a dick. Like, that was kind of my take on him.
But even, man. Just to go into the Joel and his dad stuff a little bit, because we didn't talk about it so much in the first episode, but with his dad's business kind of failing because of people working there that aren't doing their jobs and the books not being kept enough and all these kind of things. And in this episode, I just thought it was really smart writing for them to throw in when he's like, we have to bring back these guys. And he's like, they don't do anything. He's like, yeah, but their wives do. Mm-hmm. And their wives won't work here if they aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was like a little smart, like the women again, because they're not saying that men are useless, because obviously they aren't. It's just like she's trying to show how many different ways women are powerful, but still follow their men.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I remember noticing that and thinking the same. And I was just like, yeah, like that's so true. And also on the other side of it too, like it kind of took Joel down a little level too, because he came in and was like, I know everything. And like, sure, there's probably plenty that, you know, Moish isn't exactly on top of, but you know, it's like those little things that he doesn't get yet. You know, like you can't just swoop into something and be like, I'm going to fix everything, men. But so I think, yeah, it kind of showed both of those.
It's true. Yeah.
And with his dad, it showed a deeper acknowledgement of people. Like, even though his business isn't running as good as it can be, and I think Joel will definitely help, the fact that he realizes the dynamics between his employees is really important.
Well, and also the fact that Joel's like, again, like what Amy said, is like, I'm going to come in and fix everything. Like, you need my help. And then his dad kind of, rightfully so, says, you also need this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're growing!
Yes!
We're growing. Speaking of growing, Midge ends up getting to play or perform a gig in a downtown club thanks to the Village Voice interview.
Midtown, almost. Not downtown. Midway to Midtown.
Midway to Midtown.
Yeah.
Yes. And she... this scene, Bree, I know you loved. What were the things you loved about it?
Well, one, I love... because it's true. What she says is like that comedy spurns out of the depression states, and that's true, and we said that in season one. But the fact that she's just like getting pushed back by all these men, and then she sits, I think it was so smart of a thing to say, like, you know, women go through all this pain, all this turmoil all the time, like and you say we're not funny. If anything, women are the only comedians then.
Yeah, yeah. She said, comedy is fueled by oppression, by the lack of power, by sadness and disappointment, by abandonment and humiliation. Now, who the hell does that describe more than women?
Yeah.
And people of color, but yes. But that's why comedy is so important for different communities. And she just shut them down in the best way possible. Amy is our resident comedian on the panel. What did you think about the way they introduced her? I know that really pissed you off. If she can't make you laugh, she can at least make you dinner.
It's such a great depiction of what I can only imagine a club would have been like for a female comic in the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, I just read a really good book that was actually written in like the 90s, Queens of Comedy, and it's talking about the progression of women in comedy. And even just the strides that we've taken since the 90s to now, like to imagine the world that she was going into with that. And I mean, like, we've all done gigs where you get bumped. It happens. But then you get bumped again. Mm-hmm. And then you get bumped. And then when you do finally go up on stage, you get brought on with a sexist joke about how you're a woman. And we don't have very high hopes for you. After one of the comedians that she was bumped for started to go in on her too. So when she started to let loose, I was like fist pumping on my couch.
So awesome.
I think it's also just that it's so sad still because back then you're seeing this stuff happen, but then like realizing that it still happens so much today. Like I hear all the time that women aren't funny. And while I agree with certain people aren't funny and there are certain women that I don't find funny, but then there's also women I find hilarious. And I don't think it's okay to classify it as women. It's just, you don't find this one person funny. That doesn't make all of womankind not funny.
We had a really interesting conversation with Brie actually about the same exact point a week or two ago. And it's, people fail to use distinctions when they're talking about comedy. There's no way you don't find women funny. You might find a sector of their humor not funny, like things you can't relate to, like periods. We can't relate to your boners, but, like, I found a way to laugh. You know, it's this weird... And, Jeff, I'm curious your opinion. And it's the same... I see it with even music. Like, women will rap male lyrics. Like, it's nothing. And, like, we don't care. We're not fearful of our gender. Men, even when, like, Cardi B spitting the best lines ever, they won't do certain lines.
Well, it was insightful because... I do want to get your take on this because we were talking to a male comedian at the time when we had this conversation, and he said, well, for so many years, women have always like accustomed themselves to men, and they always are just getting on board with men, but like we as men don't do that for women.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I have a chance to speak. Thank you for speaking on my behalf. Finally, I have a platform for my people.
About time.
you've been oppressed for so long.
I know.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
I apologize.
It's okay.
As a woman, you know, we always apologize, but it's fine. I apologize.
I'm sorry. All right. Sorry.
Okay. Are we ready? No, I mean, I don't even ever want to entertain this discussion. Like, even dancing around it now, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Just because it seems so stupid to me. Like, I'm like, I don't want to act like I'm like this woke guy or something, but that's never been something for me. I think I find certain people really, I mean, I will say, I think my entry into comedy was SNL, and I've always viewed SNL as a women, like a female show. Like, I think if you look at the true stars of that show, you think of Tina Fey, you think of Amy Poehler. I always think of Kristen Wiig. I think Kristen Wiig to me was like such an, I have sort of a weird offbeat sense of humor. And to me, she was the perfect distillation of what I think I was at the right age too, you know, when you start to like form your comedy funny bones. And I think everything she does is hilarious. But then I also love like Tim and Eric, you know, like I think of that same kind of aesthetic when I think of comedy. So maybe I just got lucky. I have older sisters, so maybe that's part of it too. And I loved entertaining them, but I've just always viewed funny as funny. And like, it's so subjective, but to make it gendered just seems dumb to me. I don't understand it. I can't even entertain. There's certain things I can try to understand and at least see the other side, but this whole like gendered comedy thing, I don't even understand it.
Do you think that has to do with you being comfortable in your like masculinity?
Maybe, yeah. Like my wife's hilarious. Like I feel like I fell in love with Laura because she's funny. Mm-hmm. So to me, my life is so much better because my partner in crime makes me laugh. I don't know. It's so weird to me to think of a life where the person, you don't find the person you're with funny. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine marrying someone who isn't funny. That would suck so bad. Like, I feel like humor is the thing that makes our lives fun and, like, makes our marriage good.
So, Amy, will you marry me?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I will. But I heard it here first, guys.
I mean, I do agree with that and what you guys said earlier about it being an uncomfortableness. Like, the men that say just women in general aren't funny is because, like, the thing is, like, that if women are talking about their bodies and their stuff, they get uncomfortable. And I think that it takes over and they can't see the funny because they're uncomfortable with it. Whereas we've listened to so many fart and poop jokes and penis jokes. But, like, it's true. You say something about, like, oh, like, I have cramps, and, like, all the guys in the office will be like,
whoa.
Well, yeah, I think it's sometimes too, like, that preconceived notion where I think some dudes, like, are just like, oh, it's gonna be all period jokes, like, that's their, like, they just assume, like, that, oh, well, that's your bit, right? But I think when you look at this scene too and the jokes that everyone was doing, it also just goes down to a style thing. So Brie, like, when you were saying, yeah, there's plenty of women that you don't find funny just because that's the kind of comedy you don't like. Mm-hmm. Back then, too, it was very much, it was set up punchline. It was impression, set up punchline, impression. That was the style of joke. So even when you look at this showcase, it's a guy saying, I said this to my wife. And then there's a punchline. And then there's a guy doing impressions. And then there's Midge, who comes up, conscious stream of thought, completely different style of comedy, smarter style of comedy, because we're smarter. Anyways, Jeff, love you. But it's just a different style of comedy, and just for that time, I mean, for a man to have done that bit, it would have been crazy. Mm-hmm. But for a woman to stand up and have that kind of, like, different voice is really special.
And completely demolish them in saying, like, your highlight of the night is the possibility of seeing a chick fail. Yes. Do you think this ability to, like, snap back like that in comedy is necessary for her to use her smelling like who knows what and having mustard stains on her, but still able to kill it? Is that, like, you need that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you do. Because, I mean, how the amount of times you go up and you don't know if you're going to get laughs. You might not get laughs. You might get booed. You might get heckled. Things can go wrong. And that's why I love that they up the stakes so much to just standard getting bumped back in the show and then getting a little drunk and then being smelly and having mustard and her hair wasn't good and then having the spotlight go up, like, one thing after another. And I really love that they made this character so good on her feet. Because so often when they try to tell this kind of story, it's like, oh, she's really good at this one thing, but she can't do anything else right. I like that they just made her so good. That's when she's at her best, when, like, the stakes are raised and she's feeling a lot of pressure. I think it would have been such an easy and stupid choice to make her, like, be like, oh, that's her one thing. She has to figure out how to go off script or, like, things like that. So I think it's absolutely brilliant the way that they did it. And the way that Rachel Brosnahan just rolls it off like that is...
I always love, too, that her comedy, because she talks about it coming from a depressive place and from failures and all that. And then when she starts her sets off a lot of the times when she's... So her best sets come out of her, like, not knowing where she's going, like you said, but just kind of talking about what's happening at that moment and trying to figure it out. Like, you can see those cogs just moving and her being like, where am I going? Where am I going? This is where I'm going.
Yeah, you're right. One more thing I want to say about this, too. I like that Midge is attractive, and I like that she's still oppressed for it. I think a lot of times in these shows, like, the underdog has to be unattractive. Like, that has to be a thing that makes her our heroine, is, like, she might not be pretty, but she's good at what she does so she can rise above the odds. But, like, in this show, Midge is pretty. And
so stylish.
Yeah. And but the show also uses that as a disadvantage, which I think is really interesting. Like, her, it's like... It's two sides of the spectrum. Either you're, like, unattractive like Susie and that's your burden, or you're beautiful like Midge and that's your burden. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think it's so smart that the show gives us both to show that, like, there really isn't any kind of access to privilege for women in this time, because it's going to be like, sexistified somehow. Like, it's going to be misogynized somehow.
Well, and even having the guys only think that she's there, or that Lenny Bruce would do that for her because... she slept with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such
and
good
that's
writing.
Still how it is today, I would say, because constantly, I think in the industry, I'm curious if you feel this way too, you guys, where if you look really pretty, you do get more, you would get more attention by some people, but it's also a lot of times negative. Like, it's loaded. And if you don't, then you can kind of be listened to more, but then you might not be, like, they might think of you like a Susie.
Mm-hmm.
It's all loaded. And I wish that would change. And I like this scene going off Jeff's point because they bring it back to reality where the club owner rips her to shreds for ripping on his best men.
Yeah, that he doesn't even give her any praise for doing well. Like, yeah, he's not like, oh, wow, like, you did a great job or anything, because she did get so many laughs. It's just, you could potentially have ruined two people not to come back for me.
Yeah.
And just for some chick.
Was there a part of you guys, though, that was like, I get what he's saying?
Yeah, like, I understood that him being, if these people don't come back, I have specific people that come to watch them, and this money-wise, but it's still frustrating to be like, she did such a great job, like, she could easily get people to come back for her.
Right. Yeah, if she didn't get laughs, I could see, sure, you have a point, you just trashed my comedians and you bombed, but, like, she got laughs, so.
For sure. Yeah, I just think, I like how the show, obviously he was wrong and they were using that as a feminist moment, but I also was like, I think the show is in his camp a little bit. Like, I think the show still sympathizes with what he's offering. I don't know. I'd be curious in the comments how you guys reacted to him, because I knew obviously what he was saying was still, like, engendered with some kind of sexism, but I was also like, he also is a business owner.
I also, though, on the flip side of that, I follow talent. I like to follow the talent. She's on in a league of her own, and he might not be at a place where he could see that and accept that, but like Amy was saying, just stylistically, she's completely worlds ahead of them. I mean, they could have gotten those jokes from any sort of punchline comedy store. Right.
Also, the fact that they did the same thing to her, you know, I mean, I get it. Like, he's saying these people have a reputation and you don't yet, but she does. She's in a newspaper. Lenny Bruce opened for her. Like, we're not acting like this is the first time she's stepped up on stage.
Yeah.
And your comics did the same thing to her, and that's fine, but she does it to them, and it's not. Because, not to be that feminist girl, but, like, men's egos get a little bit more hurt.
They're jolting
a little more fragile.
A little bit more
fragile. I think what I like, though, the last point I'll say about this is, I think the easy way out of this is, like, for him to say you weren't funny, like, for him to acknowledge that she wasn't funny because she was a woman. But the smarter, more practical approach that the writers took was, this might hurt my business.
Yeah.
Which was at least a bit of a more thematically complicated way to kind of round out this episode.
And also notice that he gave her her paycheck and said, now take this and get out before I maybe don't book you again. But he didn't say he's not going to book her.
Yeah.
So, a part of him knew. Like, he's just like, I hate that she is, like, something special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hate it. So here's your money, but I'm still going to yell and be kind of a dick about it.
Yeah.
Right. Time.
So next up for Midge, she needs to open up about what she's doing at the nighttime to her family and friends, because I think the next step has to be more shows.
Yeah.
I mean, she's really, every time we see her on stage, she gets better and better and hones in kind of her genre of comedy. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, because it's only going to be a matter of time, too, because, like, obviously it opened with her being in the paper, but also just as clubs go, like, midway to Midtown. She's working her way up to Midtown, closer and closer to that Upper West Side, where if she goes into any club, any one of her friends, any one of her family members could come in.
Totally.
Yeah.
Jeff, are you ready for our special segment?
Yes. In fact, I want to get Bree's help a little bit, too. Because you pitched this comedian.
Sandra Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt. Are you a fan, historically, or?
I've never watched her comedy, like, stand-up-wise, but she has been on so many shows I love. Like, even, ironically, I feel like she plays herself on all the shows I love. Like, Will and Grace, she comes in and is Sandra Bernhardt, but just an extended version of herself. But I think that I'm a big fan of dry comedy, and I feel like she's really good at that dry comedy, where she's just kind of angry, but for some reason, you still love her?
For sure. Well, in honor of Sandra Bernhardt, we have a clip pulled up. This is from 91, I believe. Let's take a look.
You can laugh in the back, too, by the way. I know the kids down front get to see me a little bit better, but fake it, okay?
It's very niche.
Yeah.
Keep drinking. Just start laughing over any shit you can, all right? Because you motherfuckers better start laughing, or I want all the money. Shit. I'm taking myself a vacation because you're wearing my ass out already. Now get with the program and fake it and start laughing at the shit, okay? This is an HBO special, honey. This is not some fun little tacky little club date, okay? I'm up here busting my balls.
She's good.
That's right. I've been doing this shit for 6 months. You're here one night. You have the privilege and the honor to be this close to a fucking star of my magnitude, and you're sitting on your fucking hands. I will read you to filth. If you're old and tired and you read the reviews and that's why you're here, beat it, because I don't need that energy, honey. I want the youthful, tapped in, fresh sources, okay?
Yes.
Because, honey, I have kept my shit fresh for 23 motherfucking years in this business. You don't see me dragging some old, tired, 40-plus ass up here. No, honey. I'm giving up youthful, 19-year-old, optimistic, fresh, funky, on the cutting edge, on the tip, okay? So give it back. All night.
That's what I love about her. She's demanding it.
Yes.
She's commanding the room.
Kiss my ass.
I also love this clip because of the swearing, just because that is such a big thing with Midge, too.
Yeah.
With every time she swears, like, oh, you got a potty mouth.
Diva
and
moment,
so I just...
Honey.
It's such a middle finger.
Honey, I'm telling you, Miss Ross would have walked off the stage.
Is she filing her nails?
Throw some kind of shit fit and
my
take it off in a helicopter.
Obsessed.
What a perfect find for us for this episode. You know, it feels very consistent with
you,
the Midge we saw.
Like the clapback season.
Yes.
You clapped my mic off the table.
Well, I love that she's making it funny, even though she is technically yelling at them for not laughing at her.
Yeah. She knows exactly who she is.
Yeah.
Everyone in that auditorium knows exactly who she is, why they're there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when she does swear a lot, like people, there's always such a conversation around like blue comedy and like people who just toss out like F-bombs like just because, but she's not doing it just because.
Yeah.
That's part of like what she's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, it'd be weird if like Ellen went up there and started doing it.
Yeah.
It's not her thing.
Because we had Ellen last episode, and with Ellen we were talking so much about how she waits and she lets the pauses hit, and she's the opposite. She doesn't allow pauses. She's going to keep talking through it and mm-hmm. make you laugh regardless with being so so much energy and just keep going. She's not going to even stop for 1 second.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she's here and then they're laughing and then she goes here and then they keep laughing and then she just really goes all in and then they just keep laughing. So yeah, she really just goes up and up and up.
I love it. Great pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brie, can you hit us with some news and gossip?
Yes.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So, if unless you've been living under a rock, Marvelous Ms. Maisel got nominated for a ton of different SAG awards. Oops, sorry, I have a pop-up coming up on my computer.
Oh, dang it.
There we go. Okay, so comedy ensemble, comedy actors for Alex Borenstein and Rachel Brosnahan, comedy actor for Tony Shalhoub. It goes on and on, but like they're just... Last year they swept nominations. This year it's looking especially, and I love that it's the acting is what's getting all of the mm-hmm. attention. It doesn't look like
Maren Hinkle.
You know, but you know,
she'll
come up.
Yeah, because now that she's kind of really stepping into this role, there's no way she's going to go unnoticed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, she's included in the ensemble.
Yeah, which is true, yes. I think at this point, it's sort of like the news is when Mrs. Maisel isn't getting award nominations.
Yeah.
You know, like, shockingly, they weren't nominated.
That's true. You just can't deny the greatness that is.
Yeah.
True.
Well, thanks, Brie.
Yeah, yes. Thank you, Brie. Let
Brie will be voting soon.
Yeah.
I am fortunate enough to be a part of SAG, so I get to choose a little fraction of who is.
Yes, queen.
Nice. Yes.
Please vote for the marvelous Mrs. Maisel and all of their actors. Let us get into some predictions for episode 3.
And now,
your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Jeff Graham, can you start us off?
I'd love to. I think right now, what we're realizing is that Joel might not be a secure enough man to let his wife, well, they're separated, but to let his love, the love of his life, fly. And I'm worried we're going to start seeing that with Abe and Rose. because I think it's been interesting to see Rose become this kind of brilliant culture curator and this lover of art. And I kind of wonder if she's going to get teaching opportunities at Columbia in art history. And Abe is going to not be cool with that in the same way that Joel didn't like seeing his wife succeed as a comic.
Wow.
We'll see.
So based on what I know about season two from what they told us before it aired, the things I'm most excited for are, we know she's going to go on the road eventually with her comedy tour, and I feel like we're going to have to get into that quicker. And I think that that's the perfect time for her family to find out about her, because she can escape.
Mm.
So, like, she can kind of, like, be like, and I'm a comic, boom, out, and have to deal with it when she gets back. But I feel like her parents are going to try to be supportive, or her mom at least, and then I think that they're not going to be very supportive, at least not her dad, he's going to be like Joel, whereas when he hears that, I think for him it's not so much because you're a woman, for him he's going to be that her type of comedy and what she talks about, he's not going to be okay with it.
Because you're my daughter more than because you're a woman kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Amy?
She's seen the season, so she's not.
I'm
gonna
not
predict.
Allowed.
Amy. Oh,
yeah. I'm not allowed. I didn't know I was going to be doing the
How
show.
How did you keep your thoughts so particular to this
job,
episode?
Thank you.
I couldn't because I can't. I blend, so I had to stop that episode.
Do you predict we'll like it, Amy?
I predict you guys are going to be in for such a wild ride. It is such a good season.
Great.
So this whole, for my predictions, I'll always do what I think we're going to do on the panel.
I love this.
So I think, Jeff, you're going to have some really insightful shit to say, but we're not going to listen because you're the boy.
Fair enough.
Me and Bree, we're going to get into another epic staring contest like we did in episode one because we skipped over it on this one. And I think a rematch is due. Mm. And Steph, I think you're going to crush at moderating the panel again and probably, like, have a lot to say about Miriam's hats.
Mm. Oh, yes. You know I love that fashion. I love that. I think that we're going to get the kind of Maury scene where Midge has to come clean to her parents. And I'm curious to see how Parisian Rose handles it.
Yes.
Because she is a little bit more fun now and lively. But I still think she is a 50s housewife. So I'm curious how that will happen. And I think that Susie will... I just want more of her.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be happy with whatever it is. We will be covering episode 3.
And move on from episode 3. We'll cover the rest of the season in 2019. Because
yes,
our studios will be closed until then. But we'll come back fresh in 2019, ready for the rest of this season.
And we'll social it out when our studio decides, yeah, so that you guys can be a part of our live chat again.
We most likely will probably be covering it pretty quick within the new year. I would say within the first 2 weeks, we'll probably get the rest of the episodes out.
Yeah.
Just
great.
Because it will... I want to get it done before award season so that I need to vote, so I need to see the whole season.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, and I refuse to wait, so yeah, it's going to be fast.
Wait.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
Until episode 3, where can we find you?
Guys, my name's Jeff Graham. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can do that at Jeffrey C. Graham. Or if any of y'all are in the Cleveland area, I'll be, hanging out, going home.
And you guys can find me at Bri, Bri_Phipps, Phipps on Twitter and Instagram, or, living that 1950s lifestyle during the Christmas holidays, and I mean that by cocktail hour.
Oh, yes.
I think Parisian Rose is coming up.
Hey-o.
I'm Amy Maestri. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Amy Maestri.
I'm Steph Sabraw. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Steph Sabraw. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, you guys. We will see you in 2019, baby.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.